welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for April 14th, 2008, and on this episode we have an interview with artistic director Allison Vesely. She'll be talking to Tom Williams about the First Folio Shakespeare Festival, and you don't want to miss this interview. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, Chicago, and let's talk theater.
Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is Allison Vesely, who is the artistic director at First Folio Festival, Shakespeare Festival. Am I saying that right? First Folio Shakespeare Festival.
Yes, that is our name.
Okay. Welcome. You have a terrific new show going, Driving Miss Daisy. Tell us about that show. A lot of people remember the classic film.
Right. It actually was an off-Broadway hit about 17 years ago, I believe. And it played here in Chicago at the Briar Street Theater for a solid two-year run. That was the first tour, I believe. And it's just a wonderful play. It's a memory play. It's a little slice of life depicting a southern lady, a southern Jewish lady by the name of Daisy Worthen, who is has a car crash right at the beginning of the play and is told by her son that she can no longer drive and would need to hire somebody to drive her. And it is a depiction of race relations at that time in Atlanta, Georgia. Her driver is an African-American by the name of Hoke Colburn. And it just depicts their relationship over about a 25-year span.
And it's a key years, right? 1948 to 73.
Yes, right in the middle of the Civil Rights Movement and in the heart of where things were happening. So through this depiction of their relationship, we also get to see the world changing. And it's very funny, it's very sweet, it's very moving at times. But there's nothing sentimental about Daisy. She's quite tough,
you know. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's outspoken, very strong-willed and strong-minded. And so it's that dynamic that is so interesting about the play.
And tell us about the casting. I know there's a unique casting, well-known unknown.
Well, my husband David Rice is playing Bully, if that's what you're getting at.
Well, that's one of them, yeah.
And then Jill Schellenberger, who is just a marvelous actress, is playing Miss Daisy. Jill just played on our stage in Jeeves Intervenes as Aunt Agatha.
And she was terrific.
Along with her husband, yeah. Roger Mueller. So this is our third time working with Jill, and we absolutely adore her. She is so talented, and she's so good in this. She really does transform into Daisy Worthen, and both she and DJ Howard, who is playing Hoke, really capture the physical essence of these two characters beautifully, and shows the range from, you know, where they are when they begin and as they age. And that's another thing that this play is about, and I think why so many audiences relate to it, is that it is about the aging process and what happens to you over time, how your points of view change, how you physically change. It's just a wonderful piece.
Yes. Tell us some of the challenges of taking a play like this, which has a lot to do with Hulk as the chauffeur.
Right.
So you've got a car thing.
Right, exactly. There's a lot of, I hesitate to use the word, but mime in it, you know. The car is just imagined. They're seated on two simple benches. Which is exactly how it was done in the original.
I saw that original. It was terrific.
Yes, yeah. And so we spent time with our movement director, Michael Goldberg, just working on, you know, how do you make the audience see the car? What type of... We actually plotted out the entire play so that we knew precisely what year we were in, precisely what style car they were in, where the various things were, how big the wheel was, you know, where's the transmission, where do you shift, down to Hoke tapping on the gas before starting the car, which is what you would have done with a car back in 1948. So we really got very specific in terms of creating the imaginary world of the car.
Well, that's what theater does best, is play to the imagination.
Right. You have to make it real for the audience, you know, by what you're doing. So.
Oh,
and they do a marvelous.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll get comments later, years from now, saying they remember how beautiful that car you had on stage
was. Yes, two benches and lighting.
So tell us what approach, what got you to do this play?
I have to say my husband.
Okay.
It is one of his all-time favorite plays. You know, we are a classical theater, and this is a little bit outside the realm of classical theater in some ways, but in others it's not. First of all, it deals with a period of history that I think is really important. And second of all, it has a classical feel to it in terms of the way it's staged and the subject matter. You know, it's very universal, and I think it's a good choice for us. And certainly,
I'm glad
you know,
the
audiences that have seen it so far have really related to it as well.
Well, I'm with David on that. The film and the play were one of my all-time favorites. So you decided to do this play, and tell us on the casting process you went to. Like casting a Hulk and so forth?
We, you know, put the word out there, of course, had general auditions at Actors Equity, and then, you know, brought in a few people that we thought really kind of captured what we were looking for. But DJ actually was brought in by Jill. She had toured with DJ a number of years back in a theater piece and really enjoyed working with him. And so when we brought them in to read together, you could already see that relationship was there. And it was kind of a no-brainer casting session, you know. It's very quick and easy.
Yeah, I've had a number of directors tell me that. It's kind of magic when you hand a couple people the script and you just know it's there.
Yes, yes. And then David read with Jill, and he was like, I was like looking at my mama, you know. She nailed him in one scene, and he was like, okay, I was afraid. That's exactly the right feeling. So it was, you know, we knew instantly that Jill was the person to play Daisy for us.
Well, she's a marvelous talent.
She really is.
Yeah, and she certainly passed it off to her daughters,
her
who are
children,
doing
yes.
are doing tremendously in town as musical comedy people. So let's go let's give a little commercial for the show now. Tell us where it's at, and for city people, how to get out there, because it's really a nice ride, and it's not that far.
It is, and it's not that far, especially if you're not driving in rush hour traffic, which you wouldn't be, you know, coming out to the show. It's late enough. We are located at Maze Lake Peabody Estate Forest Preserve in Oak Brook. It's just off of I-88, the Reagan Tollway, which is just off the Eisenhower. So coming out from the city, it's a straight shot down the Eisenhower to I-88, and then getting off at Route 83. It's really very simple to find. We're not far from our friends at Drury Lane Oak Brook. And it's a beautiful forest preserve. We are lucky enough to be housed in a historic mansion. And our productions, our chamber theater, is in the formal library of the Peabody Mansion. So it's a really unique venue. It's very intimate. It's only an 80-seat house. So even the furthest seat from the stage is only 10 rows back or 11 rows back.
Yeah, and it's
like
easy
that.
Parking, too.
And yeah, free parking, large parking lots, you know, just a short walk.
And tell us what days you're running in times.
We play Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3 o'clock. However, for this show, we have already added the extra performances that we've been tending to add the last few productions. We've added a couple of Thursday shows, and the last two Sundays, we have a 7:30 show. So all of this information is available on our website, which is www.firstfolio.org. And then click on the Driving Miss Daisy button, and you'll go to a calendar. And tickets are very easy to buy. You can either call us at 630-986-8067, or you can purchase them right online. It's very easy. We've got a wonderful ticket vendor, and you can do it all online.
So it seems like you're having a terrific response to the show because you're adding all these new performances,
yes.
And that's great to hear.
Yes. Well, the last couple of shows have totally sold out by the end of the run, and people were clamoring for tickets, and we didn't have them to give. So, Jeeves intervenes. The last 3 weeks of the run, I think, were completely sold out.
Well, that was a fabulous show.
Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, same thing. We couldn't provide enough tickets. So, actually, all of this is leading to kind of an announcement.
Okay, great.
We're going to be expanding our performance venue. Next fall, we will be performing in the larger event hall space at the mansion. So we're going to be expanding to a 120-seat audience.
Oh, I know you were talking about that, and the work is going on then, huh?
Well, it's not the Forest Preserve's renovation. They're not ready to do that yet.
Okay.
It's a very expensive project, and they're still trying to raise the funds to get that done. But we do have permission to use the space, so we're actually taking the leap to add a new configuration of seating, adding more risers and more chairs to create a performance space within.
You know, that is so great to hear in an era where there's an awful lot of theater going on and some in the city are struggling for an audience. It's so great to hear that you guys are doing so well.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And
we're growing.
I'm trying to understand totally, you know, why this is happening. First reason I know, because I've seen almost all your productions in the last few years, is the quality of the work you guys do.
Well, thank you, Tom.
There's more to it too. I think it's marketing and what else do you add to it? Because there's some good theater in the city that's drawing five and six people.
Yes, I know, and I don't understand that. Maybe because we are in an area where there isn't as much theater, people are hungry for that. I know a lot of the patrons we talk to who live in the western suburbs don't like to go downtown. They don't like the traffic. They don't like the hassle of, finding parking and all of that. So they're very, very happy that we're there. But we draw from all over. So I don't know. I think it does come down to the quality of performance and the wonderful actors that we attract to our venue.
I agree with that. Plus, you guys, you and David, your husband, who run the theater group, it's kind of a husband and wife operation,
yes,
right?
It is still, I'm afraid. But, we would rather put the money into the pockets of the artists than into administrative costs. So for now, we are content with just he and I,
It's got to be tough when you have equity actors in the shows, because for a lot of our audience members who may not know, those are the professional union actors, that are expensive because you got to pay into pension and so forth.
Exactly, exactly. People don't always understand that, but yes, you do pay more for an equity actor and well deserved. They need to make a living,
Absolutely.
And that's we always pay every penny that we possibly can to make sure that they're making a living, and we keep trying to improve that. Although it's hard, we suffer from funding cuts the way everyone else does.
Yeah, I mean that is.
It's difficult.
Yeah, that is idiotic. And then you hear the waste of money in government.
Right.
That's on a whole other topic.
But, whole other topic for another podcast, right?
But I'll tell you what I appreciate is that when you come out to your shows, it's a family atmosphere, and then everyone's friendly. Then you sit down and you see this first class, really, great theater. So tell us now the history of how First Folio started and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Two crazy people 12 years ago decided to start a theater where they lived. This is basically the story. David and I, as you probably know, both worked as actors in and around the city for many, many years and gained a lot of experiences working with various theaters, sometimes, a lot more hands-on than an actor normally would be. We were part of a couple different theater companies. And so, you know, when you're involved in something like that, there's always a feeling of, well, if it was my own theater, I would do things this way, or, boy, I really learned a lot doing this, and someday maybe I can apply that to our own theater. We had talked many, many times that, you know, there was no classical theater out in the western suburbs, and why isn't there? And certainly it could support this. And finally, David and I looked at each other and said, you know, we need to put our money where our mouth is and do it ourselves. We knew about the Maze Lake site. I actually had grown up in the western suburbs and went to parish picnics on the property when I was a kid.
Yeah, I went to a couple of retreats when I went to Loyola.
Oh, they used to send us out there. And so I knew it was an absolutely gem of a property. It was, you know, this huge space, land, just gorgeous, you know, forests and lakes, and then the buildings on it as well. And just about that time, they were starting to try to put people in place to utilize the buildings. The referendum had just been passed to make that a forest preserve. The buildings, the Peabody Mansion itself, had been put onto the National Register of Historic Places, so it was, you know, saved for all time, which is terrific. And I said, wouldn't that be a great place to do theater? So we approached the group that was at that time trying to, you know, raise funds and do something with the buildings and said, you know, we'd like to do theater here. Is that something you'd be interested in? And they were like, yes, anything. Let's get something started out here. Let's get people out here to see what we have because, you know, it's a hidden gem. So out of that, we first did a kind of a town meeting to see, you know, would other people be interested in helping out with this project? Would there be interest? Out of that meeting, we developed our first board of trustees. And
what year was this?
This was 1996.
Okay, 96.
Incorporated, okay. Right, and then had these meetings and started getting things moving. We actually had our first season in 1997. We knew we were going to need some time to, you know, get things organized, get incorporated, get the not-for-profit started, you know, and get all of these, the infrastructures in place. So then we decided to approach a couple of designers to say, you know, if we started with the outdoor theater first. I don't know if you know that, but that's,
yes,
that's really all we had was the summer theater for a very long time up until about 5 years ago. And so we got some designers excited about the property. They, you know, designed an outdoor stage and lighting towers for us. We got Commonwealth Edison excited about it, and they came and ran electrical light for us so that we had enough electricity to light the lights. So a lot of work got done. A lot of people kind of signed on to the dream and cut us deals to get this thing up and moving. The greatest lesson I have learned in starting a theater company is don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to share your vision with another person because they may get excited about it too, and you may be able to accomplish what you need to.
It's great advice.
With their help. Yeah.
Yeah, I hear that a lot around town. How do you get things done? Sometimes people say it's as simple as asking for help. And,
that's right.
And there are people who won't volunteer it, but they will if they're asked.
Exactly.
Something about human nature.
Yeah. And we were lucky enough to have a venue that people came out to and said, wow.
Yeah, it is a beautiful.
This is cool. Let me help, you know.
Yeah, I love your outdoor work. And it's nice that that nature helped you with a not only beautiful grounds, but with a nice slope where you can set your theater. And, you know, you didn't have to redo the landscape.
Right, right. So so that's where we started, and, you know.
You started doing Shakespeare initially.
We started with The Tempest back in 1997. We were lucky enough to have Mr. David Darlow playing Prospero for us, which then got the media out to see us right off the bat.
Yeah, well, with David Darlow, you would.
Yes, exactly. And it was very kind of him to trust us with the with that show. So we started from there. We kind of expanded in 2000 to do two Shakespeare shows in the summer. And then cut back to one when they started doing renovations on the property. It kind of cut into our season. But by that time, the indoor venue was open to the public, and so we developed that indoor space. So then we had a year-round presence, which was great because, you know, it's very difficult to do theater when you do one show a year and then you disappear for 9 months.
Yeah, the out of sight, out of mind.
Right, exactly. We did educational touring during the rest of that time, but... You know, that's, you know, only so much.
So the outdoor is all Shakespeare, or has been?
Has been. No, it hasn't been, actually. Okay. We did Antigone 1 year.
Okay.
So classical, yes.
Classical.
But not limited to Shakespeare necessarily, although that's our first love, so we're always going to have some Shakespeare in the season.
But in the wintertime, when you're indoors in the more intimate theater, I have not seen you do a Shakespeare.
Not on that little tiny stage.
Yeah, it's a little bit tough, yeah. Because he didn't write too many. He didn't write chamber pieces.
No, he didn't. It's cast of, you know, 15 and up. So.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, we were stretching it with, you know, six actors and three apprentices for the, you know, Jeeves Intervenes. With a large
but you made that work.
Right, exactly. But it is, you know, you have to choose carefully when you've got a tiny space like that. That's why I'm so excited about... the event hall space next fall. We're doing a show called The Passion of Dracula, which we could not do in the Chamber Theater. First of all, it's a much larger cast. And second of all, it has special effects.
Okay, so you have a larger stage, too.
Yes, a larger stage.
Oh, great.
And you'll see, you know, exploding crosses and smoke and things like that. And we can't do that in the library space because there is a fire beam that cuts through the middle of the space. So you can't do anything like that in there.
Well, you know, it's so great to hear someone who had a vision and proved it to be correct. Because your judgment was there with population booms, and the only theater really out your way is Drury Lane Oakbrook, and they do great stuff, but it's all musicals.
Right, it's a very different sort of thing, and I think that people have a taste for both.
Oh, yeah.
And so, yeah, we have been lucky in that people are excited about what we're doing.
And you're drawing the audiences. That is so cool.
Well, and you know, David and I have not done this alone. We have been blessed along the way with many wonderful people being excited about what we're doing, and you know, a wonderful ensemble of actors.
Yeah, tell us about some of your actors, because some of them are really tops.
I think they're all tops,
yeah.
You know, top-rate people. Our artistic associates include Dan Aller, who has stage managed for us for many shows. He's SM on this, and I'll tell you, he's an octopus in that light booth. He's got so many things going on with this show. It's a very technically difficult show. Christopher Jensen is a scenic designer and tech director. He's been with us from the very beginning. He's a godsend, and we just love him. Michael Goldberg is our physical movement director and a director in his own right. He's going to be directing Much Ado About Nothing this summer.
Terrific.
Our summer show. So we're very excited about that. He directed Midsummer Night's Dream a couple years ago for us, and it was just a terrific production. So Christian Grey has been with us almost from the very beginning.
He's very talented.
Midsummer. Right. He was our Bertie Wooster in the last show. Sean Grennan, not here in Chicago any longer, we're sad to say, but he's a wonderful guy, and we love him, and he's doing great things on the playwriting front now. Melanie Keller is one of our ensemble, and she's up at Stratford right now.
Yeah, I really like her, and I'm so glad to hear that she got that Stratford.
Oh, she's our second Stratford person. We're very excited.
That's right, Kevin McKillop.
Leads us to Kevin McKillop, right, exactly, who was also up at Stratford in a couple of years ago. And he's part of our ensemble. He will be up at Penn Players this summer. He goes up there quite a bit, so he'll be doing a season up there. Angela Weber-Miller is another scenic designer that we work with, and she's just wonderful. What an eye. And she designed Daisy for us and Jeeves. Two very different scenic designs back-to-back. Amazing stuff.
So. You know, a lot of that's an art that a lot of people don't realize how important scenic design is.
Her attention to detail. I mean, she even dresses the entire room so that it, you know, it fits into the show that we're doing. The set design for Jeeves was just spot on perfect.
Sure was.
It just gave that feel of 1920s London flat. With this show, we've created kind of a black box. It's a neutral background with a little cyclorama at the back, so we can put color up to create mood, and then these wonderful columns with picture frames on it that really evokes memory. So it's wonderful. Nick Sands is one of our newest artistic associates. He's delightful.
Oh yeah.
He's so generous and giving on stage and off. And we're very excited about working with us. He is our Benedict for this summer. So, and then our final designer is Vicky Stry. She's a costume designer. She's done many of our shows, but she is currently designing all the costumes for Hard Rock Theme Park in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So
terrific.
She's on a little leave of absence from us.
Terrific. It's you have to feel good about where things are going. Starting something and making it work.
Well, we're in a real period of growth and change right now, actually. We've got a new push to really expand and develop our board of directors, and have added a couple new trustees already with more being considered. We really, in fact, we're actually undergoing a name change with the new season. I guess I can announce this now.
Boy, you're good for announcements today.
Yes, I am.
Right, what's the new name going to be?
First Folio Theater.
First
Folio
Theater.
Simplifying it, getting rid of the festival part of the name because I think it just confuses people. They have different connotations with festival, and we don't do just Shakespeare. We're a classical theater, so we are going to simplify it down to First Folio Theater. And with that, more development, a bigger push for new trustees and more responsibilities for them, expanding the face of First Folio. We've gone to having a trustee or an artistic associate greeting every audience at the beginning of the show so that audiences start to see, this is a bigger organization. It's not just the David and Allison show, So we really want to continue this period of growth.
Wow, that sounds exciting. And how about new works? I know David, your husband, David Rice, he's had a couple, at least one of his works, or has there been more than one?
Right, well...
Because he's a playwright. He's a talented playwright.
He is a talented playwright, and we can't wait for him to retire from teaching after next year so that he can focus on that more. He wrote The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, very well received. We actually did two productions of it. It was nominated for a Jeff Award for Best New Work, and I'm sure he would like to do more of that. We also did some writing together for our production of The Taming of the Shrew, where we wrote songs, music, lyrics.
Yeah, I like that.
That production,
I saw that, yeah.
Which was a whole, kind of Wild West homage.
So. Would you guys, just for those aspiring playwrights out there, do you guys take submissions for new works if it falls within your range?
Right. It would have to be something that was classically oriented. There's always that mission statement of ours that, our mission is, professional production.
I've seen a few plays where they're either in the style of a French farce,
exactly.
or in a kind of a Shaw, Oscar Wilde type, but it's a refreshingly new play. So some of the writers are starting to get into that.
Exactly. So yes, and that's really exciting to us. I mean, we certainly will always do the classics, but a classically themed modern play is fine. So.
Well, thank you so much for this interview, and I think a lot of people, again, I think you've stated your case for what your theater group is about, and it's more than just a summer festival. It's a year-round, totally professional, union equity theater company that, in this reporter's eyes, has produced some terrific theater.
Thank you.
And it's, again, folks, it's not a bad ride out there. It's about maybe 35 minutes from anywhere in the city, and it's definitely worth going out there.
Well, thank you, Tom. We appreciate it.
Well, I'm looking forward to driving Miss Daisy, And folks, thank you for listening, and go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of April 14th, 2008. Broadway in Chicago has announced their complete 2009 Broadway in Chicago season series. The complete season lineup includes Grease, gearing up on January 6th of next year. The One That You Want is coming back, and this time the musical is based on a reality TV show that found its cast. A Bronx Tale rolls into Chicago on March 9th, starring Chaz Palminteri. And the much-anticipated Chicago premiere of Mary Poppins begins its limited engagement on March 11th. A Chorus Line kicks up on April 14th. The musical Xanadu is also coming into town for a limited engagement. And Monty Python's Spamalot, the third coming, will be opening on January 20th. Spamalot, of course, is the winner of the 2005 Tony Award for Best Musical and lovingly ripped off from the film Monty Python and the Holy Grail. After that, Rain, the Beatles Experience, can be seen on March 3rd. This is a chance to experience what Beatlemania was all about, from Ed Sullivan to Abbey Road. The 2009 Broadway in Chicago season ticket packages will be going on sale on Friday, May 9th. For more info and a reminder when the tickets go on sale, stay tuned right here to Talk Theater in Chicago's news podcast. The Chicago Park District's 56th annual Theater on the Lake season has been announced, and the season will go as follows. Greasy Joan and Company will be doing The Misanthrope by Molière that opens on June 11th. Pegasus Players' Jitney raises the curtain on June 18th. Schadenfreude kicks it up on June 25th. And the neo-futurist Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind and 30 Plays in 60 Minutes that begins on July 2nd. The Chicago dramatist's Cadillac, which is directed by Edward Sobel, that starts on July 9th. Bohemian Theater Ensemble's Songs for a New World can be seen on July 16th. The House Theater's The Attempters opens on July 23rd. And Shattered Globe Theater's Suddenly Last Summer by Tennessee Williams begins on July 30th. The Chicago Park District's Theater on the Lake is located at Fullerton Avenue and Lakeshore Drive. The tickets are currently available. For more information, visit chicagoparkdistrict.com or check out our detailed listings on Theater in Chicago. April Showers means a discount to A Steady Rain by the Chicago Dramatists. Their hit production is now playing through June 8th at the Royal George Theater, and on any rainy day through April 30th, you can get $10 off the price of the seats. For the ticket deal, just be sure to mention the code STEADY, and for more information on how you can acquire tickets, click on over to our news section. The 2008 Pulitzer Prize for Drama has been awarded to August, Osage County. This show, of course, was written by Steppenwolf Theater Ensemble member Tracy Letts. August, Osage County, the AOC, and it is currently enjoying an open engagement on Broadway. This is, of course, after its sold-out run here back in 2007. The Pulitzer Prize for Drama is presented annually to a distinguished play by an American author, original in its source, and dealing with American life. For more information about the prize, check out Pulitzer.org or click on over to our news section. And oh yeah, our many congratulations to Tracy Letts. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Allison Vesely for giving us the honor of interviewing her this week. I would also like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.